Welcome to the Life of a Gentleman podcast. Journey with us as we discuss the life of a gentleman and how we can gain more respect and confidence with lessons in life, etiquette, and personal style. Each week, we will bring engaging discussions, thought-provoking interviews, and tips on upgrading your personal style. We are all a work in progress. Let's take this journey together. Let's live the life of a gentleman. Welcome back, everyone, to the Life of a Gentleman podcast. I'm Richard Taylor, an award-winning author, apparel industry expert, and business owner. I'd like to personally thank you for listening today and taking this journey with us as we strive to make continual progress in living by the gentleman's code. Speaking of the gentleman's code, I'm happy to announce that coming soon, our co-host Charles will be releasing a book with that same title, The Gentleman's Code. So hopefully we can whet your appetite. You're probably wondering what that's about, and I'm sure in the upcoming weeks we'll get a little bit more details on exactly what that means. In the meantime, also, we'd like to encourage you to please rate, review, and subscribe to the Life of a Gentleman podcast. The reviews mean so much to us and helps us to reach a broader audience. We also would like to thank those that have left a review because we really appreciate the feedback that we're getting. Also, I'd like to mention, I also have an upcoming book and it's titled The Mindset of a Gentleman. 10 success principles to motivate, inspire, and increase your productivity. So hopefully you'll find these literary works helpful in the upcoming months, and Charles and I will be talking a little bit more about them in the near future. Speaking of Charles, he's on the line. Welcome to the show, Charles. How's it going today?
It is going well. Another exciting episode of The Life of a Gentleman.
Yeah, it's always great to get together and talk and to be able to help people. I know we've been receiving so many emails and we make sure that we answer each and every one of them. We appreciate the feedback, like I said at the outset. I know you've been enjoying the emails as well.
Oh, these emails, they have been so positive. Ones that have telling us that within our program, they have followed these. They have had some success in life. They're taking little baby steps on becoming the person that they want to be. And that is so rewarding. I know our counseling and our program works.
Yeah, and speaking of program, today we're going to help people with something that a lot of people, I mean almost everybody, is afraid to do. And what is that?
No, are we afraid? I'm not afraid of nothing. What do you mean that we are afraid to do? What is that?
Well, statistics show that the number one fear for humans is public speaking. A lot of people are afraid to get up in front of others and to talk, tell their story, or give a presentation.
Public speaking, you are correct. The number one fear. Now, public speaking, it takes so many forms that we have to do it. Whether or not that we have to get a pep talk to our crew members, whether or not we may have to give a speech in front of class, or if we have something that we have to do to present a presentation to the board, to our boss, or maybe sometimes it may even be on a little one-on-one thing that we may even get so nervous that we shut down and we just totally don't want to do it. So what are some things that can help us?
Well, the first thing that I'd like to mention is do not read your presentation. In fact, that might even make you more nervous. I know a lot of people feel like if I just get up there and read it, it's not so bad. I can just keep my head down and just kind of blow through everything. But that's not really being a gentleman. That's not being your best and putting your best foot forward. What you have to do, even though it's nerve-wracking, is try to make eye contact with the audience. Don't just look down at your notes and just read them and then sit down without making that eye contact. People are going to respect you a whole lot more when they know that you've prepared and that you're putting forth the best effort you can.
Yeah, and that's called a manuscript talk or presentation, where we just read word for word whatever's on the manuscript. And it's funny, too, because we see those ones that they have so much bubbly personality. They're talking to you, they're laughing, but then they get on stage or then they get in front of you and they put their head down and it's kind of like a flower. They just shrink up and wither away. And you say, what happened to your personality? So by reading it, we take the personality out of the talk.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. The other point that I had is, it kind of goes hand in hand with what you just said. Be yourself. Because the more you try to act like you're someone else, it's just not going to work out. People are going to see through the act. So you want to be yourself, because it's going to help you be more confident, and the audience is going to be able to relate to you a little bit better if you're just natural and not acting per se.
Yeah, and that was what I was going to say. It's called being natural. Have you ever been a kid and be like, okay, act natural, and then you see someone else, they're doing something that's totally not natural. If you're giving a presentation and you're trying to be something other than what you are, you're not being yourself and you're not being natural. And whatever you say is going to be taken away, you'll be distracted from the message that you're trying to present.
Yeah, that's a good point too. Now, I remember when we were just talking about this subject being a good one for the podcast, you said something about gestures. What is gestures exactly?
Now, gestures is when everyone talks, they use their hands. Gestures is a hand movement that describes width, that describes height, it describes length. It's something descriptive that you use with your hands to help enhance your speech.
Yeah, and the thing about gestures is, if you just look around when you're talking to someone in a normal conversation, not a presentation, everybody uses their hands, their shoulders, even makes different facial expressions. So that all plays into gestures, you're right. So imagine that we do this every day and with every conversation, but then when you get onto stage or going to present and you're stiff as a board, it looks weird.
Yeah, one key way to show or to see that a person is nervous is they're not using gestures. Their hands is either at their side or it's clasped behind their back, or they may have a piece of paper and they're fidgeting with, and they're totally not comfortable. They don't know what to do with their hands. Their hands seem to just be going up in space. But if you can hone those gestures, here's a tip. Just when you first get started, just try to pick out keywords that you can use gestures. Maybe make a little notation. If things are high, if you're saying, oh, it was this wide, make a notation of things that are wide, things that are high. Use something that's descriptive, and then that's a tip to help you just become more natural.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And another tip I wanted to share is smile. What it does when you smile is it puts you at ease, it reduces your stress level, and it also puts the audience at ease. Everyone likes to see a smile. And so when you first get up there to speak, like you said, have your gestures ready, but also open up with just a smile right from the outset, and you're going to literally feel a calm come over you. And everyone in the audience, their tension is going to dissipate as well.
Yeah, and not only with that smile, but what we need to do when we first get up there is take a deep breath. For me, I have a hard time speaking, but when I go up and I take that deep breath, I look at my audience and I see them, oh, that brings a calm that's inside my heart that it just relaxes me, and then I smile, and then I'm able to speak and deliver in a great way.
Yeah, I'm glad you let everyone know that it's hard for you to get up and speak. And I have a confession as well. It's very difficult for me. And I would think that, like we said, it's the number one fear for humans. So for most people, it's going to be a challenge. But here's something that I've done. Charles and I have both done a lot of public speaking. And if you use these tips, just the gesturing, the smiling, the taking the deep breath, making the eye contact with the audience, finding someone in the audience that's actually smiling, that's going to help you too. I've been able to fool a whole bunch of people. I get down from a presentation and they say, "Wow, you're a pro. That was great." They don't know that my knees were shaking because I was able to fool them. Sometimes you have to fake it till you make it. And that when I say make it, I mean make it off stage. And that's how you can do that, by just applying some of those simple tips that we've talked about. Now, how about your pace of the speech? What do you think about that, Charles, when you talk about the pace?
Well, you don't want to speak too fast. You want to enunciate your words. Now, everyone has a different diction, or everyone may talk differently. But if we slow down, now we're not talking about a snail's pace, but if we just slow down and we speak slowly, this can get rid of some of our nerves.
Yeah, you're exactly right. You want to take your pace down a little bit, because what that's going to help you do is allow you to speak extemporaneously, more naturally, and also it's going to take away some of your nervousness, believe it or not, because a lot of times we get tongue-tied if we start speaking too fast, and that will eliminate some of that.
Yes, it would. You know, it's funny. It reminds me of a gentleman who I helped. He was trying to describe how he feels when he's up there speaking publicly. He said, "I feel like a duck. When you look at a duck, they may be calm on the surface and they look like they're just standing there, but underneath the surface, their feet is moving to keep them balanced and to keep them moving." He said, "That's how I feel." He said, on the surface, it may look okay, but underneath, I am so nervous. But like you said, with these tips and with practice, we have been able to fool people and actually become a pretty decent public speaker.
Yeah, and you know what? You said something. Practice. Practice, practice, practice. Because you know that you have a presentation. So don't wait till the last minute. Don't procrastinate and not prepare. When you prepare in advance and then practice it, you're getting more familiar with the material. You're able to present it in a more natural way. And here's a little tip that I have about practicing. Practice in the mirror.
Oh.
That way you can see if you're making eye contact yourself. You can see if you're doing gestures yourself, and you can feel more confident as you become more familiar with the material.
Yes, and here's a tip too. If your presentation is going to be standing, practice while you're standing. If your presentation is going to be while you're sitting at a table, practice while you're sitting at a table. Whatever your presentation is going to be, practice that particular style and put the mirror in front of you so, like you said, you can see what you're doing, and practice more than once. Do it repetitively so that the words is groups of words and it just comes out naturally, and you don't even have to worry about reading it like a manuscript, as we mentioned previously.
My final tip, and I'll let you give yours after this, but my final tip on speaking would be visualizing yourself having success. See yourself at the end of that speech surrounded by people that are asking you questions about your presentation, that are giving you an applause, that are telling you how wonderful of a job that you did. Because when you get down from a speech or a presentation, you're always looking for a little bit of commendation. It makes you feel so much better. So visualize that before you even get done. And then when you do finish the speech, you will definitely be receiving compliments because you had prepared in advance.
That is great. And my final tip is, when you get done with that speech or presentation, simply say thank you. Thank the audience for listening. Thank you, whoever you have in front of them, because they could have been anywhere else, but they want to listen to you. And if your words and if you present it in a way that's beneficial and helpful, then you're still living a gentleman's code, and you still say thank you to your audience.
Yeah, that's a great tip, one that a lot of time gets overlooked. So thanks for bringing that to our attention, because as gentlemen, we want to present ourselves in a way that shows that we have appreciation for everyone. So thank you for for giving that tip. That was a good one. And I know there's so much more to this subject and this topic, but time just won't allow us. So at this time, what we're going to do is maybe revisit this in the future and dive into the interview. How's that sound?
Let's go.
And now it's time for this week's segment of The Gentleman's News. Exclusive interviews with exceptional people discussing all things gentleman, from business to fashion to lifestyle, industry leaders, authors, and more. This is The Gentleman's News.
Welcome back, everyone, to another edition of the Life of a Gentleman podcast. We're so happy you could join us, and we're excited about the interview that we have for you today. We have with you one of the owners of selfmadebags.com, and his name is Jerome. He's going to come on and talk to us about his company, the product, and what sets them apart as a leather manufacturer. Jerome, welcome to the show.
Hi, Richard. Hello, everyone. I'm very happy to be able to make this interview with everybody today. And so let's get started.
Yeah, let's get into it. Now, before we get started, Jerome, I think we'll let the audience know they probably already picked up on your accent. Could you let everyone know where you're from?
Yeah, I'm very sorry. Yeah, I have a very strong French accent. So yeah, I'm originally coming from France. And now I would say I'm a citizen of the world because I'm not actually based in one country, but I'm based in many countries. I'm often traveling from the US, in Asia, in Europe. So yeah, I'm a citizen of the world.
All right, that sounds fun. We'll probably get into that a little bit later. Now, for the first question, just to kind of start things off, how did you start this company, Selfmade Bags? It's such an interesting concept. Could you let us know?
Actually, the idea came from a need, a very simple need, because in my previous life, I've been working with big retailers, luxury brands from many countries, from China, Russia, France, the US, and I had to do a board meeting. And this board meeting specifically was a very important one for me in my career. And I had to look very sharp and also very special. So indeed, having accessories like a briefcase, a leather briefcase, is something very important for such a meeting. And I wanted to find a briefcase that was very special, very unique, and also which was showing my personality. You know, I didn't want to have something too old-fashioned. So I started to look in different stores, different brands, from mass market brands to luxury brands. And what I realized was that nothing was really fitting with what I was wanting. I was wanting something special, something unique, and I couldn't find it. So a bit disappointed, I also looked online and didn't find anything either. So that's from that moment that the idea of why not making it myself started to raise in my head. And that's basically how Selfmade Bags was born, you know? So a need that was not fulfilled, and then that's it. Here we are.
Yeah, now that's interesting. A lot of businesses that we talk to, they start that way. It starts with the need and somebody's curious, and then they start to travel down the road to bring their product to life. And you've done that, so we have to tip our hat to you in that respect.
Thank you.
Yeah, definitely. Now, what is the difference between you, your brand, and other leather bag companies?
Well, the big difference is that Selfmade Bags is a website on which you can make your bespoke leather bags. So what does that mean? That means you go on the website, you select a style, and from the moment you have selected a style, you can personalize it. So that means you can choose what type of leather you want for the body of the bag, what type of leather you want for the pockets, what type of leather you would like to have for the belt. So that means you have a lot of combinations possible. The customer can make the bag that is really looking like he is, like his personality. So that's why we are very different, because each product is unique. So this is the first thing. The second thing is all of our products are made with genuine leather. So what does that mean? You know, leather is not a perfect material. That means each skin of leather has its own personality. And it's not, we're not a big factory. We are making our products in a workshop. And so each bag is even more personalized and even more unique because of the skin. And the last thing is that each bag is made by leather artisans. So we worked with artisans who've been making bags for many, many years. They've been used to work with luxury brand, with premium brands. And now they work with us because they want to do something more unique, more special. And so that's why you need, so these three elements, the type of leather, the fact that you can personalize your product, and the fact that the bags are 100% handmade, makes self-made bags very unique compared to other brands.
Oh, that is very unique. And it seems like when you go on the website and customize your bag, like you said, you have your own work of art, your own masterpiece, as it were, just by simply going on your website and making those selections for yourself. Now, could you tell us maybe a price range for your products, or what type of products do you have? Can you get something small, say like a wallet, or then perhaps at the same time select something larger like a duffel bag from your website?
So sure, we have a large range of products. We propose a small leather goods like card holders, like wallets, like luggage tags. We also have larger products like duffel bags, briefcase, messenger bags, laptop bags. And basically our price range starts from $99 for the small goods, for example, like a key holder, to $899 for a very large leather duffel bag. The average price basically is about $400 to $500. So this is more for a laptop bags or for briefcase. And yeah, that's it.
Oh, that's perfect. That gives everybody an idea of the price range. And it's well worth it. From the pictures that I've seen on the website, the craftsmanship is really out of this world. Now, some people may feel that they haven't paid that much for a bag before, but how does the quality that goes into these bags affect the price? And why do you think that's so important for the audience to understand?
Yeah, it's okay. Thank you, first of all, for asking this question, because we are actually not so happy about the pictures we have on our website. We would like to do better pictures, because the products in reality are so much better than on the pictures. But well, I suppose that's the, you know, entrepreneur life. We still can keep improving. This is one of our projects. We will improve in the future the pictures. Well, the quality of our products is definitely equivalent to very high-end brands, to like luxury brands. So the craftsmanship is, I would say, the same or even better. And the quality of the leather also is really excellent, because we really select carefully each skin of leather. So that's why when you think about the quality of self-made bags, you think about the same quality of a luxury brand. So in the end, when you compare, for example, a briefcase or a tote bag made by us, it's still 2 to 3 times cheaper than what a luxury brand would ask you to pay for it.
Yeah, so you really are getting a bargain. And the pictures, I know you all want to improve them, but from what I've seen, they look outstanding. So I couldn't imagine what they're going to look like in person once I make my purchase and get one.
Yeah, no, you will see the product in reality are really much better. We pay a very strong attention to the details, you know. So the way the skin are being cut, the way the sewing is made, the selection of the thread, the selection of the inner part. There's a lot of attention to details because yeah, if you want to set ourselves apart, quality is the main key for success, right?
Right. Now, here's a question, and this just popped into my head. For those of us that are thinking about purchasing one of your leather bags, or may have a leather bag already, how do you care for leather? What is the best way to care for it? We see a lot of products that are pushed where you rub on like a leather cream or something. Is that recommended?
Well, it depends on how much you are using your bags and where you are using your bag. So first of all, the way you store your bag is very important because you want to keep it in a dry environment. You want to keep it protected, ideally in a fabric bag, because you know the leather is a living material. So leather continues to breathe. It needs to be in an area where it can breathe. So you don't want to close it in a plastic box and that's it, because this will damage the leather. Also, every time you use your bag, you should be cleaning it. So you must use, there's different type of products on the market, some creams that you can use. I think first of all is to clean it with a very clean cloth and a little bit of water if there is some stains on it. And after, based on how dirty it is or how much you want to maintain it, there's different type of creams. The most important thing is once you have taken care of your bag, you absolutely don't want it to dry in the sun, because the sun is very damaging for it. So you want to dry in a place where it's still in the shadow, still where there is a flow of air, you know, and right. The same after you want, when the way you want to keep it, you have to really be careful where you store it. Think that your bag is a living product. The leather will evolve, you know, it will slightly change its color, it will darken the color. Also for one other reason, because when you carry your bag, your skin, the oil that any human beings has on his skin, is also going to stain a little bit the leather. So that's why also the products will change its color and evolve. And that's also why each bag is going to be even more unique after you use it more and more.
Yeah, thank you for those tips. They're very helpful. Now, you mentioned at the outset that you're a citizen of the world. So how does all this traveling around from different continents and different countries, how does that affect your business, or does it at all?
Well, that's an interesting question, because actually it doesn't affect our management of the company. So we've been used to work with many people all over the world, Nicole being the other owner of Selfmade Bags. And so the way we set up the company was always having in mind that we want to be able to travel, but we want also to be able to work with the right people. And so based on the skill sets, some people are based in one country and some others in other countries. We first of all looked for people that we can trust. Trust for us is very important. And it goes also with a small team. That means we really work with very few leather artisans that we can trust. For the operations, we work only with very few people also we can trust. So that means small team, but a lot of trust between everyone, and also a lot of communication. So indeed, we all have our emails. We all have, you know, the new communication tool like FaceTime. And so we set up, you know, meeting and calls at specific time of the week. So like this, we can make sure everything's all right and everybody can move on. So actually, it's not actually complicated at all. It's more about setting up the organization properly from the beginning.
Yeah, that sounds so cool. I would love to be able to travel and move around like you do. And hopefully in the future, I'll get the chance to do that. Now, before we go and say goodbye, we like to ask everyone that comes on this question. What does the life of a gentleman mean to you?
All right. For me, the life of a gentleman means two things together. Number one, it's respect. Respect in your professional life, in your personal life, respect with the people, respect with the culture. You know, I'm traveling a lot, so I came across many cultures, many different ways of living lives. And for me, even if I don't always understand these cultures, a first step moving forward for being integrated and being able to communicate with people is to respect them and to respect what they are doing. So for me, that's the number one thing that a gentleman should have in mind. And at the same time, being able to stand for what you want. You know also, Richard, as an entrepreneur, that setting up your own business or even living your life abroad and traveling from a country to another is not also the easiest way to live your life. And to do so, you need to know where you go and what you really want in your life. And so standing for what you believe is right is for me the second thing, the most important as a gentleman.
We appreciate your input on that comment, and definitely respecting cultures and standing up for what you believe. Those are very important qualities. Now, before we part, could you let everyone know the name of the website once more, and also maybe your social media so that they could follow you and learn more about your company?
Yeah, so the website's name is selfmadebags.com or self-madebags.com. You can actually find us through the website, also on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram. And we are very responsive. So if you have further questions, just drop us an email either through social media or either through the website, and we will reply to you in 24 hours, no problem.
Jerome, thank you so much for coming on and telling us all about Selfmade Bags. It's really been a pleasure getting to know you and speaking to you, and we look forward to getting one of those bags in our hands in the near future. Thanks again.
Thank you very much, Richard, and thank you everyone for listening to us. And thanks again for inviting me to join this nice moment together.
Take care, Jerome.
You too, take care. Have a nice day.
Hey guys, are you ready to enhance your style? I've got just the thing. Harrison Blake Apparel has an unbelievable deal. Get one necktie plus four matching accessories for just $25 per month. This monthly subscription club delivers style and convenience for an unbelievable price. Use code BTR at checkout for $5 off your first monthly package. That's one tie plus four accessories for $25. Go to harrisonblakeapparel.com. Welcome everyone to another edition of the Life of a Gentleman podcast. This week we have a special guest that's back with us. We'd like to welcome back to the show Mr. John Carroll, who is the founder and CEO of Trace Coaching Services. He's agreed to come on and talk to us today a little bit more about how we can achieve success. How's it going today, John?
It's going great, Richard, and thank you again for inviting me back. I enjoyed the last segment and looking forward to sharing some more content with your audience today that I hope will be meaningful for them.
I'm sure it will be. I'm really curious to know, what subject would you like to dive into today?
Well, first of all, I want to pick up a little bit on where we left off in the last segment when we talked about the circle of biz success that I walked the audience through, and kind of back that up a little bit and talk about startups, and more importantly, some of the things fundamentally when you're starting a new business launch that you need to do to prepare yourself for success.
Oh, that sounds perfect, because we have a lot of people out there that are starting a business, they're budding entrepreneurs, so they will definitely benefit from this information.
Oh, perfect. Let's start by eliminating an old axiom that we hear far too often, I think, and it's the saying that it's not how you start, it's how you finish. I think that's inaccurate, particularly when it comes to building a successful business. In my opinion, starting well is tantamount to future success when it comes to launching any new business or practice. And from the work I've done with literally hundreds of entrepreneurs, business owners, and business leaders over the course of my career, I've found that the vast majority of small businesses that don't start well tend to fail within the first 2 to 3 years for a variety of reasons. But I think principally you can boil it down into three categories. First of all, it's limited resources. And that's either time, people, capital, or expertise. Second is lack of focus and planning. And then the third is, no formal sales and marketing system in place to enable them to grow, to scale, and sustain the business long term. And I think too many of those entrepreneurs, for whatever reason, maybe they've they've lost their job and their corporate career and they're looking for a new home, or they're tired of the corporate rat race and they want to get out and take on a new challenge. But too many of them, I think, adopt the philosophy of Jonathan Winters, and that is, I couldn't wait for success, so I went ahead without it.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a and, bad move.
Yeah, and that's where I think, to the earlier point, so many of them get wrapped around the axle. From my standpoint, in order to start well, you need to establish a strong foundation that provides for sustainable growth based on solid business fundamentals and financial principles. That being said, you have to do several things that I think, and that's kind of the tips I want to share today. First and foremost, when you're launching any new business or thinking about launching a new business, you have to set realistic and attainable goals. And what I always coach business clients to do that are going through and working on their business plans, particularly when they get to the financial section, Richard,
yes,
I encourage them to be very conservative. In fact, most of them, I tell them, cut your revenue projections for the first year in half and double the amount of time you think it's going to take you to get to profitability. And then look at your bank account and ask yourself the fundamental question, do I have enough cash reserves on hand to weather the storm? And by that I mean, at a minimum, you ought to have 12 to 18 months of cash on hand and available to work through those startup challenges that you're going to confront.
Can I ask you a question about that one part?
Absolutely.
Because I had somebody email in about that, the 12 to 18 months of capital.
Right.
If they're just starting out, there a lot of people are saying that they don't have that kind of savings. So would you recommend that maybe they don't dive into the entrepreneurial journey just yet, or hold on to that full-time job and kind of work it part-time until they get to that point?
I think the second probably makes the most sense, because particularly if you're moving from a corporate career to an entrepreneurial, and I'll use myself as a great example, there are things that are going to, that you haven't accounted for, that you're going to experience in that journey. For example, in my first startup, and I'm on business number three now, Richard, first startup, I shut it down after 9 months because, number one, I lost my TV and promotional partner, which was my advertising and marketing arm for the business, and couldn't find another suitable partner that could provide the same level of services and support. And the second thing is, my business partner, who was also my wife, was diagnosed with breast cancer the first time around and had to undergo surgery and extensive radiation and chemotherapy. Well, you know, in your business planning, those are the kinds of things that you really don't think are going to happen, but they do. So there's no way to prepare for all those contingencies. So probably the lower risk avenue would be start some of the things that are going to be your replacement income on the side and build it up until the point that you're comfortable making the shift. Because far too many times I've seen with first-time entrepreneurs is they jump into it using that Jonathan Winters example, and their first-year goal is to replace their income. And I ask them the first question, well, how many sales does that translate to in order for you to replace your income? And they can't answer the question. Well, if you don't know how many sales you need to make in order to replace your income, how in the world are you going to be successful in building a profitable, scalable, sustainable business?
Yeah, that makes total sense. I guess that goes back to what you said at the beginning with the planning. So
absolutely.
Thanks for clearing that up for us. And
you bet.
Yeah, we're looking forward to hearing the rest of those tips.
Yeah, the second one I would say is network and be visible, particularly in the first year, in building not only a strong business brand, but also your own personal brand. You need to be out there, and you need to be out there facing the public. You need to be out there working your social media marketing plan to hit all those channels in order to build the brand and to start driving those high caliber, high quality leads and referrals back to your business. And in networking, if you think about networking, there are really three audiences that are important to new entrepreneurs and business owners. The first is those audience members that represent future clients. Second is those people that represent potential partners, and that's either referral partners or direct partners to where you can share resources, expertise, client base, etc. And then the third is potential suppliers. Suppliers that can help you take costs out of the business and provide quality services at potentially a lower price point. So when you're out there networking, you're really looking for new business, new partnerships, and new suppliers, not just trying to get leads and referrals. So networking and being visible is absolutely important to establish a baseline and your brand in the marketplace to where people start to recognize your business and you as that business leader. The third thing I would encourage everybody is to find a mentor that can help you and has the expertise in new business startups that can help you through those challenges that you're going to encounter in the early stages of launching your business, particularly in areas where you lack the experience and expertise. They can be invaluable in terms of shortening that time to market and shortening the amount of time, to your earlier question, to get to cash flow positive, to where you may require less cash reserves on hand to meet your financial goals. And then the fourth tip, and to me is the most important, or one of the most important, that gets overlooked most of the time, and that is put yourself on the payroll. So many small business owners in the early stages miss that step. Why? Because they don't have a lot of income and revenue coming in the early stages. They've got a lot of bills with startup to pay and launching their website, paying their attorney, paying the accountant, getting all their marketing materials and website up and running, et cetera, et cetera. They skip that step of putting themselves on the payroll. The problem with that is, although that should be a no-brainer, because the whole goal in starting a new business is to generate income, right?
Right.
The problem not putting yourself on the payroll is, where's that sense of urgency and drive for performance necessary for you to execute and meet the objectives in your business plan? It's not there. So those are the critical tips that I would say for any, if there were four to choose from the laundry list of tips, those would be my four. Set realistic and attainable goals, network and be visible, find a mentor to help you through the early stages, and put yourself on the payroll.
Yeah, those last two really stick out to me, because a lot of times it's hard to find a mentor. But also a lot of times there's people who charge, you know, for coaching and things like that. And so, like you said, when you're doing a startup, a lot of time there's not a lot of revenue coming in at the beginning. So people are a little hesitant to go ahead and get that mentor or to pay themselves because they're just so nervous. What could you say to kind of help them think about this in a different way?
That's a great question. I would say, and I'll use my example again, I was fortunate. I had three people when I left the corporate world and launched my first business that I met through networking that kind of took me under their wing. And you'll find that a lot of people you meet through networking, Richard, are very open and have already gone through the challenges that you're just starting to go through now, so they know what you're facing. And they're many of those are very open to working with you and helping you through that. But it's most of the time, the reason we don't make that connection is we're afraid to ask. Because a lot of times we're afraid to ask because our fear is that we're gonna be perceived as not having that depth necessary as a business owner to be successful. But I found it's the reverse. So I really had three that helped me through that, got me introduced to other networking groups, got me set up for speaking engagements so I could get the word out about my business and my value proposition. And so that's what I would do. I would look for, through networking, through your just normal course of your business, people that you identify as high caliber individuals that have the depth and breadth and knowledge necessary that you can draw upon, and then set up a one-on-one meeting and just go to them and saying, you know, hey, I'm new to this. This is my first business start. Do you have any tips or suggestions that could help me work through the process, some of the things that you experienced when you launched your first business?
Oh, those were some great tips. And I like the one where you said, just ask, because a lot of times we are nervous to ask, and if you don't ask, you don't get.
Absolutely. Well, it's like Zig Ziglar used to say about, you know, the sale, right? You know, if you don't ask for the order, you're going to miss 100% of them, right?
Yeah, every time. Hey, John, before we go, would you like to leave one last tip that the audience could think about? And we'll definitely look forward to having you come on again to continue this discussion.
One other tip, I think, is to know your marketplace. And by that, I mean not only knowing in terms of the geography, but really getting a line of sight on who your customer is really by developing a very specific customer profile. And then once you've done that, and I call this werewolf marketing, then know your value proposition and the problem or problems that you solve to that customer set. Because if you really don't have a deep understanding of who your customer is really and what your value proposition is, the odds are pretty high that you're going to miss the target. Because just like the werewolf, you know, first thing you need to know in, if you're hunting werewolves is, A, what does a werewolf look like? B, where can I find the werewolf, which is what's the demographic that I ought to be targeting to reach my sales goals? And then what do I need in my arsenal in order to hunt that werewolf and bring them down, which is your product and service, your value proposition, and what differentiates you from all those other sellers that are out there.
Yeah, those are good points. And I like how you lay everything out for us in an easy to understand way. And I think that the audience is going to benefit from this because they can actually apply some of these steps and start to have some success.
Oh, absolutely. Well, the idea is you just, you have to stay focused and you have to execute. You know, it's like any other dimension of planning. If you don't stay the course and stay focused on materially what's important in terms of the outcome, and you don't execute against that plan, then you're not going to produce the kind of results that you want to see happen.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And before you go, John, could you do us a favor?
Sure.
If anybody would like more information, can you let them know how to get in contact with you and maybe your website as well?
Absolutely. All of my contact information is on my website at www.tracecoach.com. And that spelling is TRESCoach.com.
Thanks so much, John. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Richard. I appreciate it.
Well, gentlemen, that'll do it for another episode of the Life of a Gentleman podcast. We'd like to thank everyone who's been listening so much for turning in your reviews and your ratings on iTunes. And we'd like to encourage you, if you haven't done so, please give us your feedback. Leave us a rating on iTunes. It will really help us. Before we close out the show, we want to just recap very quickly. And remember at the outset, we talked about public speaking and how this could be a really potential game changer for us in our lives. Because if we're able to communicate effectively, we're going to present ourselves even more so as a gentleman. Next, I'd like to give a special thank you to Jerome from Self-Made Bags. That was selfmadebags.com, where you could get fine, handcrafted leather goods. Everyone, please check out that website. Also, I'd like to give a special thanks to John Carroll from Trace Coaching Services for coming on and letting us know how to prepare for a launch when we're starting our business. Because we know we have a lot of gentlemen out there that are budding entrepreneurs, and John just came through and delivered so much value for us. We look forward to having him on again in the future and continuing this business discussion as well. Lastly, I'd like to send a special thank you to my co-host Charles for coming on and supporting the podcast. And everyone, still be on the lookout. Charles is preparing to release a new book sometime in the near future. Lastly, we'd like to thank our producer, who does an excellent job each week of preparing the podcast and making everyone sound so great. Thank you, and hats off to you. for all of you listening. Until next time, take care.
These messages are brought to you by Harrison Blake Apparel, specializing in fashion accessories such as ties and lapel pins. Join the Harrison Blake Monthly Subscription Club. Each month, they deliver one necktie plus four additional matching accessories for only $25. This is the easy way to build or enhance your wardrobe. To learn more and subscribe, visit HarrisonBlakeApparel.com. These messages are also brought to you by DeAndra Marie, a young, talented female host who conducts interviews, event coverage, and produces the Life of a Gentleman podcast. For inquiries on how to be featured, please visit www.itsdeandramarie.com.